I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Fungi seem harmless enough. Many species know otherwise, because there are some fungi who seek not to kill, but to control. Let me ask you, where do we get LSD from?
Where do you get it from?
It comes from ergot, a fungus. Psilocybin, also a fungus. Viruses can make us ill, but fungi can alter our very minds. There's a fungus that infects insects, gets inside an ant, for example, travels through its circulatory system to the ant's brain, and then floods it with hallucinogens, thus bending the ant's mind to its will. The fungus starts to direct the ant's behavior, telling it where to go, what to do, like a puppeteer with a marionette. And it gets worse. The fungus needs food to live, so it begins to devour its host from within, replacing the ant's flesh with its own. But it doesn't let its victim die, no. It keeps its puppet alive by preventing decomposition. How? Where do we get penicillin from?
Fungus. Oh. Dr. Schoenheist, you're in distress.
Fungal infection of this kind is real, but not in humans.
True, fungi cannot survive if its host's internal temperature is over 94 degrees. And currently, there are no reasons for fungi to evolve to be able to withstand higher temperatures. But what if that were to change? What if, for instance, the world were to get slightly warmer? Well, now, there is reason to evolve. One gene mutates, and an ascomycetia, candida, ergot, cordyceps, aspergillus, any one of them could become capable of burrowing into our brains and taking control, not of millions of us, but billions of us. Billions of puppets with poisoned minds, permanently fixed on one unifying goal: to spread the infection to every last human alive by any means necessary. And there are no treatments for this, no preventatives, no cures. They don't exist. It's not even possible to make them.
So if that happens,
we lose.
We'll be back.
Welcome to The Syndicate, a film and TV podcast. Be a part of the conversation as industry insiders, genre lovers, and cinephiles dare to peek beyond the curtains of imagination and dive into the art of cinema. Join us as we want you to spend less time scrolling and more time watching. Now here's your host, Armand Haddad.
All right, gentlemen, thank you so much for coming back. We're meeting again. It's been a while. And we're meeting because we just watched The Last of Us. At the time of this recording, it just ended.
Yes.
So before we get started, I want to introduce you to Aaron, you're on my right. Aaron, thank you so much for coming back.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And of course, on my left, we have Doug Levinson. Thank you so much for coming back again.
What's up? Glad to be here.
Well, I'm glad that you two have returned because we usually talk about horror movies and we're talking about a horror TV show, zombie apocalypse, fungal apocalypse, mushroom heads. So before we talk about the show made by HBO, I want to ask, first I'll start with you, Doug. How did you first discover The Last of Us?
I discovered it through the video game back on the PlayStation 3 days.
Three?
Yeah.
Oh, that was PS4. Oh, my God. Yeah, it was a while ago.
It was a long time ago.
So, yeah, because with me, I've heard of it when it came out, but I'm an Xbox guy. Mm. I didn't have PlayStation. So I was mad. I was like, it's a exclusive to PlayStation. I can't even play it. So I never played it. I always heard of it. I always heard great things about, like, oh my God, the story is so amazing. Part one, part two. But I never had a PlayStation. And I was waiting for it to come on Xbox. Never came on Xbox.
It should have came on Xbox.
I know. I don't know. Sony just wanted exclusivity with it.
They wanted it all for themselves.
Yeah. So
aren't the console wars great?
Yes.
Well, that's why I opted out. Now I'm on the PC.
So. Yep. PC squad for life.
So, Aaron, how did you first discover The Last of Us?
Well, I think, like both of you gentlemen, I like video games. I don't like play all of them, but I'm in the know about, you know, what's coming out, what's hot right now, that sort of thing. Doesn't mean I'll play them, but I'm at least aware. And unfortunately, I'm a filthy, filthy PC gamer. So I did not play The Last of Us. Heard a lot of great things about it. My friends are ranting, raving, oh, you got to play it. But I'm like, I'm not going to buy a console just to play one game. So I over the years, I've kind of learned more about it just through pop culture osmosis. So I had like the general gist of what the game was about, what like the basic plot is about. And then, of course, the HBO Max show arrives. And our boy Pedro Pascal is at it again.
Oh, yeah.
So that actually got me like kind of interested to actually watch it. And now I think like a week ago, the PC port of part one dropped.
Yes.
Ooh. So now it's actually like an option for me to play.
Because in preparation for this episode, I even told you guys, I was like, okay, I'm going to play the PC version of part one. And I looked at Steam and it was like coming out March 28th. I'm like, oh. I'm not going to be able to play it in time.
Yeah.
Oh, well. And side note, I have bought a console just to play one game.
Oh, my God. What was it?
Halo.
Oh.
All the Halo games. Because, like, I was just following the Halo story, buying all the consoles. Usually that's the only one. So.
Okay.
I'm a sucker.
Were you, like, was that because, was Halo, like, your entry into it? Or were you, like, with Bungie in the early days with, like, Marathon?
Oh.
Because I know some people, like, made the switch after
I was a hard PS2 guy.
Okay.
Well, it was Nintendo when I was a kid, PlayStation 2 because it was all the rage, and then Xbox. And the reason why I bought an Xbox is because my friends and I played Halo Combat Evolved.
Okay.
I was like, I want to play this. So I bought an Xbox, and then Halo 2 came out, which was on the original Xbox still, and then Halo 3 was 360.
Yeah.
Which took me several years to buy because I had no money.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, I followed the Halo story by buying the consoles. I remember when Halo 4 came out.
Oh, my God.
I didn't have an Xbox One.
Yeah.
So I dropped like $400, $500 because you had to buy the game, got to buy the console, then you have to buy the HDMI, and then
a
special TV. And I was like,
good Lord.
I went from a CRT TV to a flat screen all to play Halo 4.
Well, was it fucking worth it?
I would say, yeah.
Okay. There you go.
People bitched. I didn't.
Yeah.
About my Mountain Dew.
Turn in for those gamer points.
Yes. And speaking of gamer points, yeah, this is the first, I don't want to get off the fence too early, but like we can all agree that this was like one of the first successful video game to TV movie adaptation. And The Last of Us, I think, fits in there because I think we've all watched the Super Mario Brothers movie.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like, that's not exactly.
Wait, the old one?
Yeah.
Yeah. The
Luigi.
Okay.
Luigi Mamo.
Yeah.
What's his name?
He came up on I think the last time we recorded a Syndicate episode.
It was Violent Night.
Yeah.
The villain.
Luigiamo.
Yes. And then he was in the menu, which you weren't on, but.
No.
I call him Luigi still.
He keeps popping back up, just like a fungus.
Yes. So, oh my God. So like. Before we start recording, Doug, you're like, this is one of the first good adaptation video game to cinema
100%.
Quality.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen.
No, it doesn't.
What do you think is the difference? Like what, like, okay, the whole series is done. We watched it. It's out on HBO Max. Like what separates this from other attempts like Silent Hill? I'm sorry, Aaron. Resident Evil. Like
we'll get to that.
Those other ones.
I know the showrunners made it made this point too early on when I was watching it, but I know the showrunners of the show who also did Chernobyl, they said they wanted to stay truthful to the source material. So that was like a big part for them. But they also, they said that, you know, we know what worked from the, you know, the from the video game. And, you know, if we they said that if we felt like that we couldn't improve on that, we wouldn't change the story at all. Which nice. Remaining faithful to the, like, what made, you know, the game successful. I think they didn't change that core part and they brought it over to screen just like they intended it for, you know, the video game.
Yeah.
If not, made it better in some areas. But yeah, just staying faithful. They stayed faithful to the source material ultimately. And, you know, checking themselves, being like, oh yeah, you know, if we want to make this change, is this going to make the story better or is it going to make it worse? If it's going to make it worse, we're not even going to touch this anymore.
And that's how you approach it. Because, like, even though I didn't play the game part one, I watched it on YouTube.
Oh.
They made like a 4K movie. It's like three hours
like
long.
A Let's Play with no commentary.
Yes. And I was like watching the movie and like I was surprised how like entire scenes were lifted from the game and just slapped in the TV show.
Mm.
Exact lines, exact like framing of the camera. I was like, oh my God, this is so true to the game. I was so surprised.
I'm really surprised to hear that because like I've not seen any clips from the game or the show before going in. I've gone in like completely blind. So I'm going to have to play the game now.
Oh, yes.
Armand,
on PC.
Yeah.
Remade.
I've brought this up with you before, I know at least.
Okay.
I don't know if I've talked about it on the show, but almost 10 years ago, I had a series on YouTube called Screen Jumper. And I was basically looking at video games adapted to movies and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I ran into Silent Hill.
Yes.
And that's why I pimped that movie out so much because like
you're such a stan for that
movie. I am. And I'm not ashamed because it was like one of the only examples I found of like a pretty decent movie adaptation of a game. Don't look up that series on YouTube. It sucks. I keep it up there as like a time capsule
for
how my own skills have developed. But
hey, guys, this is Aaron, and I'm talking about Silent Hill.
Yeah, exactly. It is a necessary stepping stone on my growth. But
and now you're WSDR.
Yeah, and you know I didn't know it at the time, but I was basically doing like intro to media studies as far as I was really trying to understand like. What makes a video game a good video game and what makes like a good movie and why has there been so much difficulty with like transferring one to the other?
Right.
And here we have as an example, like a TV show. And I think that's actually one of the major benefits of the show in trying to adapt video games is that video games are very long form. It's pretty rare to complete one in like, a feature length runtime. It's for hours and hours and hours.
Right.
And it gives you the time to like develop these characters, you know, if they're written well. And always with these adaptations, you're going to miss the element of player choice,
mm-hmm.
particularly with like really well developed games that have this in mind, like Deus Ex. Their player choice is always at the center of it, and how the story unfolds has to do with your interaction. You're not going to get that with like other media. So don't even try.
Unless it's Bandersnatch,
yeah.
Black Mirror.
Yeah, that was interesting. But I'd say that's more of like a choose your own adventure novel than a game. But regardless, people are going to, those lines are going to blur as technology develops. But right off the bat, we have a very long nine-part, I guess it's a season. They're going to have a season two.
Mm-hmm.
And already you're like, checking off the box of a good adaptation because like you have the time to really get to know these characters and develop them and go on a journey with them. These are like really beefy episodes too. They're like at least an hour length, each one of them.
Yeah.
I think the first one was like an hour and a half. So it's nice to be able to let that stew cook and like really get to know these characters. And that's what I really enjoyed about this series. I haven't played the game, so I can't speak specifically to that, but I'd be really curious to know, like, from both of your perspectives, like, what elements of the game actually did transfer over, and was it more like set dressing, or just, from the sounds of it, just like scenes copied whole cloth, or was there an element of the gameplay elements that actually made it in as well?
So, Doug, you can speak more to this, but, like, very quickly, of course, they're going to be different. Like, the characters look kind of different in the video game. Like, the main character, Ellie, kind of looks like Ellen Page before she became Elliot Page. And then Joel kind of looks like Pedro Pascal. And then as we get into it, like, Tess looks a little bit different. Like, there's, like, aesthetically, there are some differences.
Yeah.
And the time period, I think, is slightly different, but that doesn't matter. But most of the general framing is preserved. The story beats are definitely preserved. And then where the script really shined, that was lifted. So, Doug, since you actually played these games, I didn't play these games. I looked at the cinematics. So was it similar, or were there differences? Like,
there's definitely a lot of similarities, but then there's a lot of so, like, when I played this game, it was, I played it way back in launch, way back in the day. So watching the show, like, I was remembering some gameplay while it was coming along, and I was like, that this is like perfect picture for picture. And then it was like, there's times where I was like, this is different. I didn't remember how this, that this played out this way. So they did, you know, pull in, you know, they kept true to the game, but they also made differences in areas, which I think made the story even better. And they took out some elements too that I also did end up missing. I don't want to go too much into spoilers or the storylines or episodes quite yet. But they definitely, you could definitely tell that their first, that their main goal for this show was to capture the essence of the game and expand upon that, expand on that success. And I think they did that 100% successfully. And one of those reasons why is because they didn't decide to do it like this in like in a movie. I think, I mean, they decided to do this as a show, which I think is the better call for, you know, making adaptations, especially from video games. It's like you try to fit, like you said earlier, all this stuff into like one, like 90 minute movie.
2 hours.
Could you imagine them doing that for The Last of Us? And yeah, that wouldn't have worked. 90 minute. No. You need 90 minutes for that pilot. And I mean, they knocked that out of the park too. Yeah. I mean, going down to characters and even, you know, the clickers too. The clicker, the show, they wanted to make it so that you didn't have to, you know, play the video game to see this show. And they did a great job at that, because I was watching it with my parents and they weren't even asking me questions like, hey, we haven't missed anything, did we? And I was like, no, you really didn't.
Can we trade parents?
What's happening? I'm watching it too.
Yeah. My brother recently tried to show my parents the movie Heat. And it was a bad time. They were pausing like every few minutes, like, who's this guy? Oh, what are they doing? Why are they at the airport? I can't see anything. Oh, my God. I don't know. Some people
close the blinds. I can't see.
I have to remember that, like, watching a movie is not like, it's a skill that needs to be developed. And not all people have the wherewithal for that, unfortunately.
Oh, I see that in the movie theater all the time.
Yeah. He's going to get him.
When I saw Scream 6, I kid you not, there was a 5-year-old next to me.
Oh, no.
I'm like, this is not appropriate for a 5-year-old.
No,
people got gutted. A lot of blood. And I'm like, let's just hope it's going through. Going over his head. But with Last of Us, I've noticed there was several changes. But the changes in the TV show made it even better. For example, like when we meet Ellie in the TV show, she's essentially held captive by these insurgents, rebellion type people.
The Fireflies.
And in the game, that's not really the case. She's kind of she kind of has freedom, because like in the show, she was like chained up and not allowed to leave. And like in the show or in the game, that wasn't the case at all. And I was like, okay, well, I mean, realistically, if this character was in our real life, we would treat her more like in the show. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Which we'll get into, because like now we're dancing upon it.
Yeah.
I think we need to get into it. So
I did want to add
a
couple things.
Before we go.
Feel free to cut this if this is too off topic. In my Screen Jumper experience, I noticed that it often goes better if you adapt like a movie to a game, because you can add those elements of interactivity to the story, and you're basically acting like the character would. I'm thinking of one game I covered called Stranglehold, which is a actual sequel to the movie Hard Boiled by John Woo.
I don't know any of these.
John Woo was a Hong Kong action director.
Yeah.
Came to the U.S. for a little bit, then realized that Hollywood sucks, and he left. But while he was here, he made a wonderful, wonderful action movie called Hard Boiled.
Nice.
He was one of the guys who pioneered the action movie trope of flying through the air with pistols akimbo, firing both of them.
Really?
Ooh. Yeah, that was John Woo.
Oh, wow.
And so years later, if you remember the video game developer Midway,
they're still in operation in Chicago.
Yeah.
Cicero, actually.
Yeah. They made a game called Stranglehold, and it is an actual sequel to Hard Boiled, written and directed by John Woo. And nobody knows this game.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, they got the actor back, Xiao Yun-fat. They use his likeness and voice. You play as his character, and they have a whole like stunt system for flying off of things, shooting things, reloading, and all this stuff that you do in the movies. And it actually works out pretty well. So I'm curious, like, if there's any TV shows or movies nowadays that would actually like benefit from an adaptation to a video game. Another example is the Mad Max game that came out after Fury Road.
Yes.
Where they basically take like what Max does in the movie and turn it into like an open world sandbox type thing, which I'm like, yeah, that's a good way to do it.
It was a big hit for me. I could tell you that much. I was addicted to that game.
Yeah. Do you stream that?
I never streamed that one. No, but I played that game like right after, pretty much, you know, I bought the Blu-ray. I remember that.
Yeah.
Here's the thing, Aaron.
Yes.
Now you're slightly younger than Doug and I, but when Doug and I were early teenager, even younger, there was a big boom, especially with Star Wars games, where you had the movie coming out, and then all these video game developers were like, we need to make video game tie-ins.
Yes,
the movie tie-ins. To market the movie. And we don't really get that nowadays.
No, that's not part of the marketing strategy anymore. I think because video games, like as an industry, have gotten like so big that if you want to make one, you either have to do it like super fucking cheap and just like farm it out to some kind of mobile game developer, which I guess they still do. To some extent, or you have to put all this development time and money into it. And it just the nature of the development cycle and how it works with Hollywood is like, you can't really line them up as easily anymore. That's my guess. I think that's what happened with the Mad Max game, because it's kind of a tie-in, but it came out at a different time. So I don't know.
Going off of that, I know that I saw Cocaine Bear recently, and Cocaine Bear actually has an 8-bit video game that came out with it. Yes.
No shit.
Yeah. I haven't checked it out yet. I haven't checked out this video game.
It's a mobile game?
But no, I think it's I can't remember if it's a mobile game or if it's a PC game off the top of my head.
Wow.
But I was going to check into it because, you know, I saw that it came out with the movie, and I was like, why is nobody talking about this video game? It's an 8-bit, so.
Wow.
The last thing I wanted to add was I've noticed that the really bad, like, adaptations are usually done by people who don't care for the source material at all. I just mentioned Stranglehold and John Woo's, like, direct involvement with that, and which is why I think it was part of the success. But so many times you have, like, these Hollywood types who are like, what is this, Tetris? We can make a movie out of that. Who cares? Whatever. And, you know, that's when you get like complete crap.
It has nothing to do with Tetris. It's like, or like the espionage,
the Hitman movie. Oh God, all the Hitman movies.
All the Hitman movies. Oh my God.
Like, you know, you could kind of sometimes see where they're trying to like, you know, recreate how the game might feel. But then especially the latest one is like dumpster fire.
I remember seeing that.
And it's like, yeah, they don't care about the character or the world at all. But I noticed in the very opening credits that the same writer who wrote the original game developed by Naughty Dog is one of the writers on the show.
Yes.
So it's like you have someone who's like actually bought into it, who's helped helping to steer the ship. And I think that's another key ingredient for why this adaptation works.
They care about the source material.
Yes. Yes.
Because, like, I'm going to talk about a recent magnum opus shit show, the Halo TV series, which has nothing to do with the storyline of the video game.
Oh, my God.
Master Chief takes off his helmet. You see Master Chief's ass in so many scenes. We call him Master Cheeks.
Master Chief?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. What? Why? Is this a Cinemax show?
No, it's on Paramount Plus.
Oh, my God.
I fucking bought Paramount Plus. Just like the same.
Halo would make a great, like, gay porn, like, ripoff.
Why?
I don't know.
The Halo?
Just, I don't know.
Master Chief has to go into the ring.
Yeah, that's part of it.
Dick.
Master Chief, I don't know. He strikes me as a bear. I don't know why.
He could be a bear.
Yeah.
Could be a bear.
Underneath all that armor. Then
he has sex with Cortana. I could go on and on.
Cortana's an easy one.
He doesn't do that in the game.
Oh, he doesn't in the... Oh, my God. I thought you were...
No.
I thought you were proposing that for the porn ripoff. Oh, my God.
He has sex with Cortana in the canon TV show.
Oh, no.
I mean, I'm sure every...
No, wait, no. He doesn't have sex with Cortana. He cucks Cortana.
Oh.
Because Cortana's watching.
Oh, my God.
And he has sex with the Covenant spy, which is a human lady. I'm telling you, I was watching it, and I'm like, oh, and then Cortana's in the background watching him have sex with the Covenant spy.
Oh, is she, like, pleasuring herself while watching? Like, Master Chief.
It faded to black before we got that far. And I was like, what the fuck is this show doing?
It's like every fifth grader's fantasy. Maybe.
God, it was dog shit.
Oh, my God.
And
I feel embarrassed for you.
It was, oh, my God. I trudged through it. I was like... I have to, you know what? I paid $5 for Paramount Plus. I need to watch this whole damn thing.
You need to send them a bill.
Yeah, get your $5 back.
Holy shit.
And it's renewed for season 2.
Oh, no.
Everyone hated it. But everyone did not hate The Last of Us.
I was about to say, maybe it's time to revive Screen Jumper.
Yeah.
Give this show an autopsy.
You would enjoy shitting on this show. And you never even played the games.
No.
The original trilogy of Halo.
I played Combat Evolved, but that's it, because it's on PC.
I think all of them are on PC now.
Yeah, they are now.
Yeah, they're all on the Xbox Game Pass.
Yeah, the Master Cheeks collection.
You're giving me temptations.
Okay, going back to The Last of Us. Okay, so before we go any further, we need to jump into this. When you jump into the story, who would like to volunteer to summarize the whole plot of part one of The Last of Us? Doug?
Noah.
Noah.
Doug,
Aaron?
Thank you for volunteering.
Noah.
Noah.
Joe.
Me.
Got the wires crossed. You look like one of my friends, Noah.
Man.
And my brain went to weird places.
Oh, boy. All right, Doug.
Well, hi, I'm Noah, and I'm about ready to, summarize The Last of Us for you. So, The Last of Us is a survival horror apocalyptic story about basically something called cordyceps, which is like a fungal infection that takes over the mind of its host, basically evolves and, starts taking over the human race, turns us all into mindless, like really weird sounding and terrifying zombies that have fungus growing out of their heads. And within this apocalyptic story, we are introduced to two characters called Joel and Ellie. Joel is a man who is, who has been through a lot, and we're first introduced through him to this story. And his beginning is very tragic, very dark. And after a very set of unfortunate events where he loses his daughter, we fast forward to 20 years later, where he is surviving in this post-apocalyptic society who's trying to, who have basically this group called the Fireflies, and the main group, which I can't remember their names, but they're government-run.
Fedra,
yes.
Which is like it's like FEMA, but with the serial numbers filed off.
Yes, yes. It's not a good organization to be a part of, nor is like the Fireflies. Both sides are like always constantly fighting, but the Fireflies have their hands on this young girl named Ellie, who is revealed to have been infected, and she has survived a bite from the cordyceps zombies from the clickers. And that is no bueno for everyone, because, you know, there's a system where they scan you, and if it comes up red, they will shoot you immediately. And if she comes up red, no one's going to stop to wonder and realize, you know, hey, is she infected at all? Mm-hmm. So through a set of unfortunate events, you know, they're trying to get and move Ellie out west to a facility, and they end up crossing paths with Joel, and Joel is basically kind of forced to take this girl under his wing and take her across the United States to seek a cure. And basically the story is basically their survival and them basically discovering what lengths they would go to almost protect one another.
Right.
Yes. It's a good summary.
It is good. Yeah. So The Last of Us shows a zombie apocalypse. So if it's not really zombies, it's like a fungal parasite infection type thing that
clickers
affects the brain, which I thought was so ingenious to do, because like if there was a zombie apocalypse, it'd probably be that, because like it's already real.
Yeah.
It affects bugs like that.
Yeah.
And then we have the main storyline is that Joel is trying to get Ellie, because Ellie is immune to the cordyceps disease, and they're trying to figure out how they can harvest whatever is inside her that makes her immune and make a vaccine out of that. That's like the main storyline of this. And before we go any further, I want to bring up, like, I don't know when production began when making this story or for HBO, but like this feels like a very much a post COVID commentary on the pandemic type show.
I mean, the story was written like what, 10 years ago? So building blocks are already there way before COVID.
Yeah.
But it has a distinct relevance now that we've lived through a pandemic.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's one element that they never really, you know, explained, you know, in the video game series, and bringing that into the show, making it like more current. I don't know if you want to talk about this yet, but the whole intro with the cordyceps and the scientist guys.
That was amazing.
Yeah. Like a talk show from
who's
like
played by,
the 60s.
Yeah. John Hannah, who, I mean, I don't know if you guys will ever recognize him from like The Mummy and The Mummy Returns.
That was him?
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh,
that was Dr. Newman.
God. Oh my God.
So, yeah, I mean, I say the first three episodes, they never explain it in the show, but they kind of subtly revealed like the origin of like the cordyceps and like where they came from. I thought that was a fantastic, you know, terrifying, you know, addition to this show. I mean, because in the game they never explained it.
Right, in the show it was like a flower factory in Jakarta,
in Jakarta. Yeah,
because like the flower served as like a food for the fungus or something.
Yeah.
Which makes sense.
But yeah, no, yeah, that opening scene, though, with the doctors when they were talking about the fungus, I just stopped right there and I was like, damn, this could be happening right now. And we wouldn't be able to stop it.
Yeah. There's two epidemiologists on there. One of them is like, you know, there's like bacteria and viruses out there, but like, we'll be fine because, you know, we've survived them all before. We have like vaccines and treatment and stuff. So like, not that big a deal. Then the other guy is like, we have nothing against fungi.
Yep.
And the other epidemiologist is like, you know, they can't survive in humans because, you know, they can't survive past 94 degrees Fahrenheit.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, that might be true. But, you know, if, for example, the world starts to get a little bit warmer, it might prompt them to evolve in such a way to account for that warmth. And they then could survive in human bodies. And then like, all the air gets let out of the room when everyone's like, ah, fuck.
Yep.
We got nothing against this.
I remember the talk show host kind of looking like uncomfortable in his seat. It's like he's supposed to keep everyone from like, you know, feeling that way a little bit too.
Yeah. Like, he's like cracking jokes and, you know, kind of lightly mocking the fungus guy. But then like towards the end, he's just like, we'll be back.
Yep.
We'll be right back after these messages from Dove Soap.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that setup, like, it definitely was like a exposition dump to to tell the viewer, like, okay, this is going to be the origin of. Mm-hmm. And that just blew my mind, because, like, even though it serves to explain the world away for me as mm-hmm. as I'm watching this, it's also like low key, like a little reminder, like, oh, well, you know, our world's heating up, climate change, global warming, mm-hmm. and this fungus already exists.
Yeah.
Yep.
Like, you see it in bugs. Mm-hmm. And that's where my mind went immediately when I was watching this. I was like, this is real already.
Yeah. So safe to assume this part of the series was added to the series. It's not in the game.
Correct. Yes. Okay. Yeah. They never added any of that to the game. They didn't waste any time explaining to you, like, how it, like, happened, who was, like, what was ground zero, what was ground one, what caused it. So
that's part of the game.
What?
Or are you talking about the series where they, like, explain, like, how it actually happened?
Oh, no, I'm talking about the game. Yeah. They never explained it in the series. Okay. In the game.
Because in the beginning you have, like, this static feed montage as, like, the credits are rolling, a little cinematic.
Yeah, the kind of the Day of the Dead opening.
Yes, where it's like all these, like, oh, you know, I have reports, you know, and oh, people are getting mad and rioting. Oh, they're actually infected. It's a pandemic. That's how the game opens.
Okay.
Which I think the TV show is stronger by having that 1960s talk show where they're having the scientists on. Kind of like the Behringers of bad news, like, you know, this is probably
Harbingers.
Harbingers.
Behringer is a music gear company.
The Marshalls.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that sets up the world a lot more effectively than having, like, the video game where it's like static feed and, you know,
yeah,
it's hokey. It's been done before. This is more cinematic, and it sets up the world a lot better. And seeing the fall, like the zombie apocalypse, ground zero type event that we've all seen, Dawn of the Dead, Shaun mm-hmm. of the Dead,
mm-hmm.
Day of the Dead.
Yeah.
They all do it. And I've never seen something so elaborate mm-hmm. done before, with like a giant 747 crashing into the ground.
Yeah.
In the background, I'm like, oh my God.
Okay. I want to talk about
lay it out.
Onboarding.
Onboarding.
So onboarding is when you're telling a story, when you're making a show, a movie, a game, even, there's a certain amount of information that you need the audience to be aware of before they can proceed forward.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
How do you give that information out? There's a lot of different ways to do it. And I think I am in agreement with you that it seems like the series does it really well compared to the game. Maybe the game does it enough, but
yeah.
Especially for people like me who never played, you're going to need some information going in. So there's different ways to do it. Star Wars is probably the most famous. It just has scrolling text and you're just dropped in the middle of it. And it's like 2 minutes and, like, bam, all you need to know. Okay, here we go. And then we go on a journey. I guess the most, like, cliched way to do it is like a voiceover. It can be done well, like the Avatar, The Last Airbender series, like,
yes,
little voiceover before every episode that tells you, like, the short history of, like, how all this came to be. And it's,
and
like
the Fire Nation attacked.
Yeah. And it's like, great. That's all I need to know. And then you can go. I'm trying to think of a bad example specifically, but I know the trope where they don't tell you, like, anything and it's left as a mystery and you,
M. Night Shyamalan.
Sure.
Yeah.
We'll go with that. But it's like, you're given, like, no information about how any of this works. And you're like my parents, pausing every 5 minutes. Like, what? What's happening?
Confused.
Yeah.
Lost. You're in the dark.
Yeah. There's ways to do that where if the central idea is supposed to be a mystery and the mm-hmm. movie or show is about that, then you can kind of discover along with the characters. But so often I see it done really, really poorly. I do have a bad example, actually. Do you remember the series Ruby? RWBY?
By Red versus Blue?
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Here we go.
That's a throwback. But they did it really poorly because they do have a voiceover.
I met all
intro.
Of them. I should have told them, hey, your show sucks.
I think they would agree. they have like a RAP Monty. They do have a voiceover intro and it tells you a little bit about, like, how dust works. But then, like, they don't explain how semblances work. And they don't explain, like, how magic works and how they're even all different because visually they all look the same. And they end
up.
Does
it matter to weebs?
I think you should tell a good story no matter which audience it is.
Amen.
And they ended up making, like, a whole, like, separate, like, side show where they had to explain everything in the universe. And it's like, that's not how you do it. That's not how you do it whatsoever. And I guess you can also err on the side of like explaining things too much, where it's like, there is no like mystery or tension, or it's just like way too much detail. And I know Star Wars has fallen into this at times. So finding the right strategy to give that necessary information to your audience is super important. It's also something I've been trying to get better at as a DM for my tabletop games, is like, how do I explain the information the players need to know in a way that's like dramatic and interesting and not going to bore them to tears? Sometimes I just straight up tell them, this is how it works. And it's because you're playing a game, you should know how the rules of the game work. Yep. Other times it's like, let's make this a little bit more of a mystery. Or is there like a dramatic scene where the characters involved, can, in the course of just acting out drama, like impart that information? Or you can do it like Star Wars, where it's like the people already know in the universe how it works. They just mention it and move on. And if you have enough context clues, you could just get how it works.
And the way The Last of Us treated us learning about what's going on, because like right in the beginning, we had like that talk show where it's like, oh, there's a fungal parasite that could control your brain. And then we flash forward to 2003, where we're following Joel's daughter, and they're taking the Shaun of the Dead route, where all of the things that are build the world are happening in the background. The characters are going on with their lives.
Yeah.
And in the background, we as the audience know, oh God, there's going to be a zombie apocalypse. The characters don't know that. And we see all the breadcrumbs like coming together. We see like, you know, jet fighters going through the air. People are like closing down shop early, where she gets the watch for Joel.
Elderly neighbor is being a creep in the background.
Yes. Like there's these little tiny hints that will pay off later. And I think that's a way more effective way. Like, we're not in the dark. The characters are in the dark.
Yeah.
Like, we should be knowing what the characters are going to do and how they're going to act. Like, we shouldn't be confused about the world that we're playing in.
Right.
If you're going to reveal stuff, it should be about the characters, which the show does. We learn as we go through the story, we learn more about Joel. We learn more about Ellie. We even learn more about Joel's like family, you know, his daughter, his brother. Like, that is spoon-fed to us. Well, the world is not. We need to know what's going on in the world.
I like that point that you brought up. The rules of the world should be clear, but what can be discovered and revealed is about the characters.
Yeah.
I think that's a good kind of solid foundation to build upon, no matter what, how you're going to onboard that information to your audience.
Yeah, and going back off, you know, like the world building too, like right after that opening sequence, you know, with the doctors, we're introduced to our characters, and in the background, you can hear on the radio that there was a explosion in Jakarta, and that you know, stuff is already starting to go down. You're like, if you pick up on that and then watch episode two, the beginning of episode two, you immediately know, oh my God, this is what was happening pretty much at that point in time.
Yeah. I noticed that the first few episodes, they kind of like jump back and forth between like 2003 and 2023. And I could see that going really poorly, but they somehow managed to pull it off in a way where it doesn't lose you.
Yeah.
And doesn't like dissolve that tension.
Because you learn the context of what's happening now in 2023, you know?
Okay.
Yep.
Because like you have, you know, everything has a payoff, because like we flash forward to Joel and his whole family's gone. He's alone. He's in this like police state encampment, where the last remnants of society is there. And it's like, well, how did we get here? And then we flash back to 2003. It's like, oh, this is what happened. Just fast forward 20 years. Of course, it's going to look like this.
Yeah. And they also, they stopped doing flashbacks after, I think like episode 4 or 5.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it was after episode 3 was the last episode where they had the, like the 2003 flashbacks, I think.
Yeah. So I could see that conceit kind of wearing thin if that was the case for the whole series, but
yeah, I'm glad they didn't do that for the whole series. They could have easily have done that, and I'm glad they didn't. I'm glad
it was a low hanging fruit.
Yeah.
And they chose not to grab it.
Good.
They're like, no, we're better than this.
Good.
But there was one episode with a flashback that when it happened, I'm like, of course this is happening with Ellie and her friend.
Yes.
That's when the show...
Tell us about it.
Okay. So as the story goes on, we learn that Ellie is immune and...
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
On her arm, she was like bit, and it's like it healed over like a certain amount of weeks. And like for everyone else, all the normies, if you get bit by the next day, you're going to be a mushroom head.
Yeah, 24 hours, I think.
Yeah. So Ellie clearly healed from her encounter. And then we see that encounter happen. And it was when her and her friend is from Euphoria.
They're just friends, just roommates.
Did they kiss?
Yeah.
They did kiss.
Ellie does kiss her, yes.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah, so like her special friend. Her friend joins the Fireflies, which is this rebellion group against Fedra and whatever America has become at this point. Mm-hmm. And they're in this mall, which is cool because it's all liminal space.
Yeah.
Dead. It's really cool. They're playing the arcade and Cordyceps attacks them and they both get bit.
Mm-hmm.
And her friend turns, Ellie doesn't. That whole episode was like, oh God, it felt like Stranger Things when Eleven had her side adventure for an entire episode.
With her weird British friends.
Yes. She became emo for one episode.
She became like punk.
And
she's like, okay, we're going to go back.
It's like, okay, I don't mind learning this information about who Ellie was before she met Joel, but it's like, you need an entire episode dedicated to this. I didn't think so. Doug, I feel like you're disagreeing with me.
So I was sick when I was watching that episode, and no, I'm going to agree with you. It could have been. Arguably, I was like, am I going to die? Am I going to become a clicker?
Got the yeast infection.
I remember watching that episode, Armand, and I remember texting my friend. I was like, I don't know if it's just me or if I was sick, but I was falling asleep during that episode a little bit.
It was not.
Felt like filler?
It was, yeah.
It felt crack in the armor for
it
this
felt,
show.
It felt a little long, but I mean, it could have maybe have gotten to, you know, its point a little bit sooner, but it took a little bit too long of a time maybe for the payoff to finally happen.
We all saw it coming.
I knew it was like, coming the whole entire episode.
What wasn't that episode based off of DLC?
I don't remember.
Felt like
any,
DLC.
I don't remember any of that part actually from the show, to be honest. So I can't really remember if that was like a copy and paste from the show at all.
Could have been.
I think it was
it DLC.
Been.
It could have been.
A normal miniseries is 8 episodes. This was 9 episodes.
Oh.
I mean.
Forgot about the one in the chamber.
This is a whole different discussion, but I think it should have been 10 episodes.
Oh.
But,
okay. We'll get there.
But we'll get there. But yeah, going back to that episode with Ellie and her friend. Yeah, I don't know what it was. I just, it felt long.
It was boring. Nothing happened.
It was like, oh yeah, this is happening. And it's like, okay, I know the sense of dread is coming. You're already playing the music. Just get it over with.
Mm.
And it showed the zombie 30 minutes before it attacked.
Yeah.
So it's like,
there's no tension there.
Well, the tension is, well, I guess tension, dread, like, oh, it's something's going to come. Watch out. But like, it was way too long. It's like, you almost forgot about it.
you can't hold tension forever. It has to be paced really well. And it felt like mm-hmm. that was just like they blew their load too early. And it's like it was like 5 minutes of tension. Like
blew their load. Yeah. All right, what do I do now? Do I just stand here?
Guess I'll clean up.
Yeah, you know what I do now that I thinking about back to it. Now I do remember when I was watching that with my parents. They were like, "So when's that zombie going to come back again?"
They said that.
Even they. Knew.
I think I remember that. Yeah. Mm.
God, I was like, "All right."
It was some nice development for Ellie.
Oh yes.
It was, but it didn't have to dedicate an entire episode. It could have been it could have been like 10 minutes. Like all the other flashbacks we got in this show was like nice short little snippets. Like she could have been like looking at her arm. This is like the shitty way to do it. Mm. Oh man. And then
it's like a match cut.
Yeah. Then it goes back to when she got it. It's like, oh, and then, oh
yeah.
I would be a hack screenwriter, unlike Doug over here.
Yeah.
But that's how you would do it. It's like, okay, it's like that makes sense in the context, but yeah, an entire episode. And it was like halfway through, I'm like, fuck, this is going to be the whole episode. We're not going to see. Because like the thing is, before that episode, Joel gets like shot or something or stabbed.
He gets stabbed
by the Marauder. So I was like, I want to know what's going on with that.
Yeah.
And now we have to take, hold on. Pause. Let's learn about Ellie's backstory. It's like, fuck. I don't mind learning backstory, but like, you have to do an entire episode to this thing.
Yeah, I agreed. My attention started wandering. I like got up and got something to eat. Just had it on in the background. Took a bathroom break.
It was the bathroom break part.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, I'll be right back. Learning nothing new.
Yep.
Kind of seemed like they were trying to capture, you know, Bill and Frank from episode 3.
Yes.
That like that the magic of that episode again. And yeah, I mean, I preferred that episode 3 over that other flashback.
Because it was, as Martin Scorsese would put it, pure cinema.
Oh my God, yeah. Dude.
I was about to ask, like, what was your favorite episode? And that would have been my answer.
Yeah, me too.
Like Nick Offerman?
Yep.
I mean, you can't go wrong with Nick Offerman.
Yeah.
And like start to finish, he was just charming the whole time. Like going into it, I knew nothing. I heard, you know, I watched the show late. I watched this like 2 months later after premiere.
Yeah.
And I heard everyone was like, oh my God, Nick Offerman's episode. Oh, this is the greatest episode of television history. And I never understood why. And like going into it, I was taking on a ride and it was beautiful.
Yeah.
I got emotion.
It's a lovely little love story.
Yes.
And Nick Offerman, he just kind of like parachutes into these like different projects where you never expect him. No. Like I was watching this Hulu show about the Pamela Anderson sex tape.
Oh, Pam and Tommy.
Yes, he's in that.
Yeah, he plays like this like.
Yes.
Yeah, have you seen it?
No, I just heard about it.
He plays this like porn director who like this complete scumbag, and he's. He plays like the guy who basically like purchases the sex tape and like duplicates it to like send it out on mail order. But he's like, he's got like long hair and he's like got like different like facial hair going on. He's like made up and I like just didn't recognize him until I like read the credits. I'm like, Nick Offerman. But yeah, he's great in that. He's great in this.
And in this, he was pretty much Ron Swanson's wet dream.
Yeah.
There's a bunker underneath his house.
Yeah.
I mean,
but he's got a soft spot because he never learned to love.
Yeah.
Because he never found the right guy.
Yeah.
Never found the right guy.
Until he found one that he trapped.
Yeah. Well, love can bloom on the battlefield. According to Metal Gear. I don't know. This is like a really, when they talk about like writing good, like gay characters, like this is a prime example. Well done.
I didn't expect this story to feature a homosexual couple or a prepper.
Yeah.
Or anything. I just knew Nick Offerman was in it. For all I knew, I thought it was going to be the episode of him like lamenting the death of his family or something. Because the only picture I saw was like him, didn't see anybody else, at a dinner table. And I was like, is this like a whole episode of him monologuing?
Yeah.
It's like, oh man, my life and this and that. And then what we got was like this beautiful snapshot of like an entire relationship of this couple. They meet, you know, they develop this bond, they fall in love, they grow old together.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought it was perfectly well done. And the thing is, Doug, you probably know this.
Mm-hmm.
That episode, Aaron, was originally supposed to be over 2 hours.
Oh.
And they cut it down.
Oh, I did not know that.
You didn't know that?
No.
Originally, it was supposed to be over 2 hours.
Give me the two-hour version of it. I want it.
I think we all want it.
Yeah.
So if this is ever released on DVD,
Blu-ray.
Give me the unrated
4K.
Cut.
I want the full thing.
Yeah.
Director's cuts.
Because
I hope it happens.
Because that whole episode, that like all that backstory wasn't in the game. They changed up his whole entire, up a majority of his storyline because, you know, I don't want to get too far into spoilers because, I mean, he eventually, you know, meets Ellie in the video game. There's banter between them two. That's okay. Just amazing.
I didn't get that far in the cinematics.
But
I heard like,
but I mean,
Frank's already dead in the video game.
Yeah.
At
yeah.
That point.
Yeah.
You
meet just Bill. And you know, when I was watching that the whole entire episode, I was like, I remember none of this. And I'm like sitting there. I'm like, just like in tears, sobbing like the whole entire episode. My dad's like, is there any clickers coming in? Like, I'm like, don't look at me right now. I'm an emotional mess. I'm like, I never knew Frank's story. This is beautiful.
Oh.
Yeah, that was a give me the 2 hour version of that now.
Yeah, I want it. I want it right now.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, it's just funny because like typically you don't picture a doomsday prepper like that.
Yeah.
No.
They're usually like I don't know, super macho, super hetero.
Like, yeah. Super conservative.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to go hunting.
Thin blue line.
I'm going to listen to Alex Jones.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like, oh my God, like in the beginning where like Fedra is like searching his house and like when he like looks up, he's like, you new world order jackboot fuckers. I was like, I stood up and I cheered. I was like, yeah. And then this beautiful story unfolded. I was like, oh my God, this is incredible.
Yeah. I feel like it's not a sideshow though, because you mentioned the episode where like Ellie goes to the mall and that felt like a sideshow and like it didn't really connect at all. But episode 3 didn't. Why do you think that is?
I think because it tied into Joel and Tess.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's like a huge reason because I was even watching it. Like it even, okay. Here's the thing. It details, it's like one of those flashbacks where it like shows the world. It's world building. It's just through this different character. It's not Joel. It's through Bill. And it's also tied into Joel's story because they develop a rapport. It shows Bill showing he could trust people. Like he trusted Frank because he's an outsider. He's a prepper. Mm-hmm. He only wants to survive alone. But then he realizes he can't do it alone. He wants to love. Fell in love with Frank. And he learned to trust strangers, Joel and Tess. And they even had this, like, he was the guy on the radio, right? He was the guy on
yes.
the radio
yes.
playing the songs.
Yes.
So they had, so, like, when you realize that as you're watching, it's like, oh, my God, this guy's technically been part of the story this entire time.
Mm.
And I think that fit into the world, and it, like, grew the world even bigger. So when we got to Ellie and her friend's story in the mall, that felt like a side adventure. Because we didn't learn anything new. I mean, we kind of learned how she got bits and like she lost someone very close to her, but like it didn't expand the world that we're watching. Mm. You know, it wasn't like, what's the word?
It was like learning how Darth Vader got his armor. Like, who the fuck cares?
He said no.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's the biggest thing. And that, it felt shoehorned.
Okay.
Like there was no heart. Like me engaging with these characters, I cared about these characters because like they're almost human. They're almost like real people.
Mm-hmm.
While Ellie and the other actress, I don't want to knock them. They're kid actors. But it's like, it just wasn't good. It was very shallow. It felt, I don't want to say like a filler episode, but it was borderline filler episode.
Yeah.
Like, how do you feel about it?
What you brought up about, you know, the episode 3 story kind of tying into themes of like love. I think that's kind of where for me it works really well, because at the core of this whole series is the relationship between Joel and Ellie, and like how far each one is willing to go for each other.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Not only out of self-preservation, but out of love. And as we'll get to, I'm sure, Joel goes pretty fucking far. Out of love and to protect someone else. So I think that's kind of a setup for the eventual payoff of showing what Joel's willing to do.
Yeah.
And we see it in a different context and in a very beautifully told story. You know, the content of it isn't different. It's not like, you know, Frank goes on this like killing spree. All the same, it shows like how in the most unlikely circumstances, love can be found, and it can be a kind of force that brings out the best in people.
Yeah.
So that's to me why that works. And we have like a paint by numbers version of that with the whole Ellie backstory thing.
But there was no sacrifice.
Right.
It's not like her friend who was going to join the Fireflies was like, you know what? Never mind. And well, you know what? Let's infiltrate the Fireflies or like do something that puts her life on the line for Ellie. That doesn't happen.
Yeah. That's why I call it a paint by numbers version. Cause it's like the pieces are all there, but still looks kind of shitty.
Yeah. Oh my God. Like that's such a great setup because I didn't even think of it that way, but it's absolutely true because like what Bill does for Frank, cause Frank's like, I don't know what he has. Maybe like MS or something.
Yeah, some kind of degenerative disease.
Yeah, where he's not getting better. And he chooses the humane way of like, okay, I'm going to crush up a whole bunch of pills, overdose, you fall asleep, then you'll die. And Bill does that too.
Yeah.
He's like, you know what? Yeah. Like, I'm done.
Yeah.
I'm done.
Lived a good life. I can't imagine living it without you. Let's go out together.
Yep.
And let's get gay married. we'll go for it.
He puts himself on the line.
Yeah.
Like he makes that sacrifice. And then Joel does that too multiple times for Ellie. Like, let's get into it. Cause like we have that encounter with other survivors in, well, before we get there, he reunites with his brother. They're in this beautiful community where everyone's working together.
Jackson, Wyoming, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then after that, because he has to deliver Ellie to the hospital for the cure and all that stuff. They run into marauders or vagabonds, whatever,
bandits,
and they were tied to this larger group, I guess a cult, I guess?
Yeah.
Religious cults where some patriarch.
Oh, yeah, with the preacher man.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, the preacher. Oh, yes. Yeah.
That was in the game?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And, like, what's revealed in multiple things. Like, that episode... Because like, I'm a big Walking Dead fan.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Walking Dead walked, so The Last of Us could run. Because like I was watching, there's a whole bunch of different plot points that The Walking Dead tracked, but like The Last of Us just did a phenomenal job, so much better. And one of them is the cannibalism plot points in this small town where they're running out of food, it's winter, and it's not telegraphed, but like it's kind of... In the back of your mind, it's like, are they eating people? And that's revealed at the end that they're eating people. And they were going to do that to Ellie. They captured Ellie. Like, Joel is, like, bleeding out. And he fucking kills the people that are trying to catch him because he killed their people.
Mm-hmm.
And then he rescues Ellie out of the mouth of the beast, of the preacher man, who's also a pedophile.
Yeah.
Tried
and
assault.
A rapist.
All of it. Just he's all
check off all the boxes. What don't you like? Put it in this man.
Well, I mean, he doesn't really save Ellie. Ellie saves herself, and then he, you know, runs into her.
Yes. But,
yeah, that's a turning point for Ellie.
Yeah.
Yes.
She takes a life.
Yes. Well, she took a friend's life.
That doesn't count.
Okay. That, that episode doesn't count.
I don't think she beat her friend's face in with a blunt object.
In a way, it's also a turning point for Joel in the series at the same time, because it's the first time he calls her baby girl since the beginning of the, since episode one. And I just bawled my eyes out as soon as I heard that.
He becomes daddy.
Daddy Pedro.
Oh.
My slutty daddy. I'm sorry. I had to say it.
I mean, reluctant father archetype, trying to guide a child through a dangerous landscape.
This
hot
is
right
the
now.
Way.
This yes, is the way.
This is the way.
I wanted to ask, maybe this is not the right time for it, but I wanted to ask, because this show has a lot of like Venn diagram crossover with The Walking Dead.
Yes.
But it feels really different. And I've watched like one season of The Walking Dead, and then I had my fill.
The Frank Darabont one?
Mm-hmm.
That's the only good
one. The best one.
The best one.
So I'm curious to hear from either of you, like, why you think these shows feel so different from each other when theoretically they have a lot in common.
Would you like to go first, Doug? I can just gush about Frank Darabont the whole time.
Yeah, I mean, well, as much as I love the first season of The Walking Dead, I own it in Blu-ray. As soon as you hit season two, I feel like it becomes more of like a soap opera to me. And it becomes, I mean, yes, you have plenty of Walking Dead action, but, you know, a lot of the storylines for The Walking Dead feel redundant.
Mm.
Past season three, maybe four. Like when the governor was around, it's like, oh, cool.
Because they lost me at like season six or seven, and
that's when it started getting stretched thin.
And it was because it felt like the same things over and over
Negan.
And then they were like,
Negan,
oh yeah,
show.
we're gonna kill off Rick Grimes.
Yeah, that's when I stopped giving a shit. I was like, you killed. Yep. It's like killing off Joel.
They didn't
like,
character.
It's like I don't give a fucking well the whole point of
the problem
I'm watching this story is for this relationship of like Carl and Rick.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
and we have that with Joel and Ellie, but go on, Doug.
But you know, they quote unquote killed him off just to set him up for more movies. I was just like, oh my god. Okay,
does he come back as a zombie?
You lost me.
No, he's still
you
alive.
Oh my god.
That was the end of the show for me, especially when Carl and Rick were no longer on the show, because they were the first two characters that we were
Daryl
introduced
dies,
to.
If Daryl dies, we riot.
Yeah, God.
If Daryl dies, I don't give a fuck.
The only person I really cared about was Carl.
Oh.
They got rid of him eventually, too, so I was like, okay, I'm done.
Shitty end for his character, too.
Yep.
He killed himself.
Oh. What?
Yeah. I think he got bit, right?
I think he got bit. And then
it's like, well, all right.
I don't know.
Blam. And I'm like, what's the point of this show?
Yeah.
What's the point of this show?
Yeah.
Is this just misery porn at this point?
I suppose.
The Last of Us had a point.
And The Last of Us feels like it's going to have an end, unlike The Walking Dead.
Mm.
Let me tell you another point. It's the same plot points, but like Joel and Ellie. Joel lost his daughter in the beginning of the outbreak.
Mm-hmm.
U.S. soldier shoots, you know, trying to quarantine.
Yep.
Attempts to kill them both, shoots his daughter, and it's almost beat for beat, exact the same in the game and the TV show.
Yeah.
I both choked up watching it happen twice.
I choke up every time.
And, you know, he didn't have another daughter. I mean, he kind of had a romantic relationship with Tess,
mm-hmm.
the woman he found in the Fedra camp. But like Ellie showed him that he could love again, and he can love a daughter or a girl that isn't his daughter the same way that he loves his daughter that died. That's why he carries around the watch with the bullet hole in it as a reminder to carry her memory and never forget. And yeah, he finds that again in someone else. It's like, oh my God, I have to take care of her. Like, it's because in the beginning, you see that evolution where, like, this is an assignment to, like, get, like, a car battery or a truck or something like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In the game, it's different. It's guns. And then through the journey, he cares about her. He even loves her.
Yeah.
And with The Walking Dead, you have that in the beginning seasons. And then it turns into zombie kill of the week.
Okay.
Because like it's the intent. HBO is not trying to monetize this show. AMC wanted to monetize The Walking Dead.
I see.
Because it started with season two. Because season two had double the amount of episodes of The Walking Dead with the same exact budget as season one, which had six episodes.
Really?
Yes.
Oh.
And that's what they came up with season?
Yeah. So they fired Frank Darabont, got this other dude, hired Gunn. Double the episodes, same budget. So that's why they're on the farm the whole time. They couldn't really do much with it because they wanted to monetize this shit out of the show because season one was such a big success. They're like, all right, so we have our cash cow.
Yep.
That's why I'm glad they didn't do that with The Last of Us, like drag Last of Us throughout like multiple seasons.
They could have done
it. If they did that, they
people would watch it.
People would watch it. I probably would have watched it too.
We all would have watched it. But it wouldn't be a critical acclaim status.
Yeah.
It feels like that. People would be like, oh God, it's The Walking Dead again.
Yeah. Because I mean, people think of, you think of Last of Us, you know, me as playing the video games. The first thing I think of are like the clickers and those being terrifying. You know, the show, The Last of Us, unlike The Walking Dead, you know, yes, it becomes like zombie kill of the week. It becomes like, you know, oh, how many zombies are we going to meet this episode?
Right.
With The Last of Us, the cordyceps become kind of almost like into the background, and we're more focused on the characters and like the horrors. Mm-hmm. It's kind of the same thing with Walking Dead, except, you know, The Walking Dead couldn't walk that fine line of, you know, human drama and zombies. I feel like, you know, in this one, they push the cordyceps even further back and they bring the characters more to the forefront, which I appreciate more, I feel like.
Yes. It's okay. It really touches upon all the Walking Dead stuff because, like, in the beginning of the Last of Us, the focus was, oh my God, the zombies are the big threat. And then by the end of the show, it's like, oh my God, people are actually shitty.
Yes. Mm. To people that are the threat. Yes. Yeah.
And isn't that like what most like good zombie media does? It's not about the zombies themselves, but it's using them as a way to explore like different aspects of humanity.
They try to. Yes.
The good ones.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's why I said we'd try to.
Yeah. Cause like, one of the Dead movies, I can never remember which one's which. The one where it's at a mall.
Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah, it's like
the motorcycle gang.
The remake.
Yeah, it's like, cool. That's a way to explore like consumerism and how it uses zombies as a metaphor for that.
Yeah.
There's aspects of the original one where race was a part of it and using that as kind of like social commentary.
Mm-hmm.
But it sounds like what you're saying, after season one of Walking Dead, it became about the zombies themselves and kind of lost the plot as far as like exploring the human condition.
Yeah. The special effects artist, Greg Nicotero, who started off as like, you know, he's been in a whole bunch of horror films. He's an icon, special effects. He was a special effects dude for Walking Dead. And then as for the later seasons, he became director.
Oh.
So I was like, look how awesome my special effects are.
No.
Practical effects. And like, to be honest, his episodes weren't that great. He's not a director. Like he makes an awesome, you know, zombie makeup walker person. But like, he's no director.
You know who the best guy to organize this entire shoot is?
Who?
The prop maker. No disrespect to prop makers. They do an incredible amount of work. Recently on WSTR, not to plug my own thing, but we were talking about like the different creatures of specifically the Rise of Skywalker, and it's there's a ton of great designs, a lot of great
complained the whole time.
Yes. We both did.
That's his fandom menace moments. It's the Rise of Skywalker.
Yeah, we trashed on that movie the whole time. But
the facade was lifted, the veil was lifted, like, oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah, but we saw like all of these different alien and creature designs, most of them like actually made and in the movie, but for like 10 seconds at a time.
Babu Freak. That.
Yeah, and then it's like, then they move on. It's like, what a travesty to like commission all of this fantastic work and then it amounts to nothing.
For a dog shit movie.
Yeah. For 10 seconds, it's like,
well, Babu Freak's in The Mando.
Yeah.
Hey.
I mean, they're enjoyable because I just imagine them as like a bunch of like,
I hated the movie.
Old Italian men from Jersey. No fix.
Fix it again, Tony. And when he popped up at Mando, I was like, yeah, Babu Freak, even though the movie he was originally in was awful.
Yeah, they knew what people would remember.
Yes, that's correct. All right, Doug. What were we talking about?
We were talking about The Walking Dead.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Don't let the prop makers be in charge of direction.
Yeah, like, God. Yeah, I mean, that's a big revelation. And like with The Last of Us, they're not having the people that made the clickers direct scenes.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's not their job.
The clickers, you know, they advance the plot forward, their opposition to the protagonists, and they're like a threat. But the story's not about them.
No.
It's about Joel and Ellie.
You had one episode that where they were the main set piece. And honestly, that's all you needed.
Yeah.
The Walking Dead.
Those bloaters out there.
It's every single fucking episode. it's a formula at this point. It's like, okay, there's going to be a zombie attack. When is it coming?
Yeah.
It's going to be one specific zombie. Like, oh, this one's the mummy zombie. This one's the slimy zombie.
Mm.
God. Last of Us doesn't do that, thank God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whew. Okay. So, yeah. And like we said before, the heart of it is this sense of sacrifice between Joel. I mean, it's just Joel sacrificing him, going out of his way. Like, he could have, like, near the end of the show, like when he finally surrenders Ellie over to the Fireflies, Marlene, right?
Marlene, yeah.
The leader of the Fireflies. And he completed his mission. That's it. Game's done. Defeated the bad guy. Went to did the last mission.
Turned in your quest.
Yep.
Got my loot. And then he realized, no, I can't do this.
Yeah.
Because then he learned that they were going to dissect her brain.
Operate on her.
Yeah.
Kill her.
And he loses it. He's like, no. Yeah. And then you have that. Truly, he's putting himself. He goes full Rambo and kills everybody.
Everyone.
Everybody.
He goes full John Wick.
Yes. Killing everybody. John Wick 5.
Yeah. Doug.
Yes.
How does this play out in the game?
I remember you're giving two options. You could either sneak around or you could shoot your way.
Which one
to
did
Ellie.
You choose?
I shot my way to Ellie.
Yeah.
I was like, after these Fireflies, they didn't ask her, you know.
WWJD.
Hey, are you okay with us dissecting your brain to save the whole entire human race? You're going to die. Okay, thanks. Bye. And I was like, no.
Yep. What would Joel do?
Oh. What would Joel do? Yeah, what would John Wick do? But yeah, no, yeah, I chose violence, unfortunately, in the video game.
Nice.
How does it play out if you like spare everyone?
I don't remember.
Is it like Splinter Cell? Is it like Wolfenstein?
That's a throwback.
It is a throwback. They're bringing back Splinter Cell too.
Oh, they are.
I don't know if how that's gonna work, but
but yeah, no, yeah, in the video game, I'm not sure.
Fuck this! Boom, 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 boom.
Yeah.
Did you kill the doctor and the nurses?
I don't think you're given an option for that part. I think you actually do have to shoot them.
I saw footage where he has like a flamethrower and he torches the doctor.
Oh my God. Holy
like
shit.
Like differences between the game and the show. he's like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe less forgivable if it's a flamethrower.
Fuck you.
I know in the show, there's some ambiguity about like whether everyone in the hospital like knows what they're doing. And he just kind of like kills them all anyway. Is that true in the game as well?
I don't remember.
He's too busy killing everybody.
Oh, fair.
Yeah. I think people were shooting back at me when I was shooting them. So
that's all the justification you need.
I know, right?
Castle law. Baby.
Even though, you know, killing Ellie was the justification I needed because I was like, I just saved her ass. I brought her all the way over here for you to kill her.
I just love in the show where like the doctor, so Joel gets to the operating room and they're about to operate on her. And the doctor's like, no, I can't let you take her. And he has like a scalpel and Joel shoots him immediately.
Yeah.
I can't let you take her. Dead.
Yep.
Immediately. I was like, good. And then he takes Ellie and he confronts Marlene. I did not expect this at all. What happened? Oh. Doug, can you explain what happened when he encounters Marlene?
So
for the last time.
Yeah. So basically they find each other out in like a parking garage and Joel basically is carrying Ellie out and Marlene is like, you know, yeah, you can like pretty much take her. You can go. I'm not going to come after you. And Joel, you know, you could see in Joel's brain, he is thinking the wheels are turning. Is she really ever going to stop ever coming after Ellie after what he's just done?
Right.
Boom. Shoots her right there.
Yeah.
And in the game, I remember that part because I was like, I was like, am I on the right side now? I'm like, what Joel is saying is true.
Are we the baddies?
Yeah, are we the bad guys?
I was like,
I was like, damn, he shoots her. Like, he shoots her, like, right then and there in the stomach, cold blood. Even though, you know, she survived a gunshot before, I think, in the beginning of this, in the show,
right,
in the stomach. But it's okay. We won't think about that again.
He then double taps her and shoots her in the head.
Oh, yeah. That's she right.
Like, she was saying, like, oh, you can save me. And he's like, no.
I forgot about that part. Sorry. But yeah, no, yeah. I forgot that he shot her in the head. But yeah, that, yeah. Shooting and killing Marlene because of the fact that, you know, he was afraid that she would come after Ellie and wouldn't stop.
Mm-hmm.
How far would you go for the people you love?
And
kill everybody.
What's super important about this is that Ellie's not really conscious for all
of
this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, right. She has no idea this is, like, happening. I don't even think she had any idea that she was going to die on that operating table.
Yeah, they kept her in the dark.
Yeah.
And then later, Joel has to, like, explain what happened. And that's what gets really interesting about this show.
Yes.
Maybe the game?
Yeah.
So,
I don't remember. The ending of the game is foggy still.
Okay.
They go back to Tommy, correct?
I believe it just seems.
Yes. Like it. Yeah.
So Ellie is wondering, like, well, what happened? Like, I mean, last time she was conscious, she was on an operating table, and now she's in a car and they're driving away, just her and Joel. And they get to Tommy's encampment society thing. And she, like, confronts Joel. It's like, what actually happened? Is what you told me true? That, what did he say again?
I think they operate on, like, a few other immune people, and they, like, couldn't find, like, a way to make a vaccine.
I think he said that you weren't the only one, that there are other kids like you. They don't need you for the vaccine anymore.
Okay.
I think that's what he said.
Okay.
If my memory is serving me correct, who knows?
And also that Marlene let them go.
Yeah.
Yeah, Marlene let them go. Yes.
She was like, is that true? And he said, yes. So I'm like, okay.
Mm.
And that's how the show ends. And we're left like, he lied to Ellie.
I remember that moment.
Mm-hmm.
But was it justified? So let's start getting off the fence.
Oh.
Was he justified?
Of lying to Ellie? He should have just told her the truth.
Really?
He should have just told her the truth that, hey, they were going to kill you, so I had to do what I did to save you.
Because it's the train car problem. It's like, okay, either, you know, the two
trolley
routes.
Problem.
Yeah, the trolley problem. Where it's like, save my son from death, or I save everyone else when my son dies. So it's like, you have to pick one. And he picked Ellie.
Mm-hmm.
Because he could have let Ellie die, and they potentially could have created a vaccine. We could end this whole fungal apocalypse. But he was like, no, I want to save her because her life is meaningful to me.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to do that, he needs to lie to her. So the lie and her and him shooting up everybody is that trolley problem.
Mm.
It's like, do I just leave? Everyone's saved. Or do I kill everybody? And she's saved. Because could you let your kid die for this, you know?
Yeah, that's a hard one. Because there's the ethical problem of, like, her dying could mean that, you know, a vaccine or some kind of cure is found.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Potentially saving, like, everybody.
Mm-hmm.
But can you justify that with, like, the death of a kid?
Yeah.
I don't know. That's a hard one. And there's also the
a kid other, you love.
Yeah. And there's also the ethical problem of, like, was he justified in, like, lying to her? And for me, it's like we see kind of the growth of Joel and Ellie's relationship, where at the beginning, like, he's not even going to give her a gun, doesn't trust her with that. She ends up using it to save Joel. And then he's like, okay, you can carry a gun now, but I'm going to teach you how to use it. And then kind of Ellie has that pivotal moment where she ends up killing someone for the first time. Well, really killing someone for the first time.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's shaken up after that. And I'm sure Joel's kind of parental instincts are kicking in, where he wants to protect Ellie at all costs. And maybe it has to do with like his previous daughter dying and his kind of regrets with that. But I think maybe he doesn't want to confront in his own mind, like what he did to save her. And he'd rather, you know, take that with him to the grave. Maybe that's why. But I think it reflects on what like every parent has to deal with, is that your kid's going to grow up and encounter the world and in all of its horror and pain and loss. And you can only protect them from that for so long.
Yeah.
And I think he wants to hold on to that for a little bit longer. Maybe not the best move to make, especially if you're trying to like establish trust with essentially your now adopted kid.
Yeah.
But I can understand like why he decided to lie about it. Cause like, yeah, that's some fucked up shit that, you wouldn't, either you don't want to accept for yourself or you don't want to pass that on to someone else. Especially because, like, if she has survivor's guilt and that she could feel like she caused him to do all that for her, and that can, like, really fuck up someone. So it's not really an easy answer either way.
It's a good one. You leave me a lot to think with now, too.
Because I'm just imagining myself in the place of Joel, and if I were, like, a parent and something like that happened, like, what might I do? And honestly, I'm really torn.
Yeah. I mean, because honestly, I mean, like, with my experience with, like, with lying and, like, watching, like, characters lie in, like, shows and movies, it never really ends up good for them in the end because the truth ultimately comes out.
It always comes out.
So it's like, as soon as you say that lie, you kind of know the implications of being like, well, either this lie is going to either blow up in their faces when it comes down to in the line, which it probably will. But I mean, yeah, I do get why Joel would lie to her in that instance as a parent now.
Mm-hmm.
So never really kind of thought of it
is
like
the
that
main,
before.
Is the main issue just, well, I guess I'm going to answer my own question. So I guess like she's alive. So whether he told her like, hey, like I had to kill everybody, they're going to kill you. Or if he lies like, oh, they let us go. Either way, she's alive. But is the main problem not like him telling her exactly what happened is the issue? It's more of he destroyed the trust that she would have in him. Because like with relationships, you can like do like 100 good things. But if you lie once, it destroys the whole relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I can never trust you ever again. You lied to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know how damaging that lie will be for Ellie, because like, it's kind of implied that she doesn't fully believe it already, but especially if she like finds out the full extent of it. I'm not 100% sure how damaging that's going to be for her, but I think it's more of like what it represents as far as either Joel not wanting her to grow up fully to be like her own person, or him not able to accept for himself what he's done.
Could be either way. Yeah. It's probably, you know, for Joel, since he lost his daughter, he doesn't want to lose another one. So it's like defensive, you know, defense instincts where it's like, well, I want to preserve the daughter I have right now. And it could be a sense of sheltering because like you said, he didn't initially give her the gun. She kind of like had to take it for herself,
yeah,
type of thing. So it's like everything is not like he didn't initiate it.
Mm-hmm.
It's more of she's reacting to the world, sometimes to his benefit, like because he would have been probably dead if she didn't take that gun. He's probably sheltering her, which I don't blame him because it's a dangerous world, and two, his daughter died because of this dangerous world.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, I don't want this to happen again.
Yeah.
Yep.
So he's being a helicopter dad.
Yeah. But man, what a journey of growth he's been on throughout this whole series. Like at the beginning, we didn't really mention this, but at the beginning he like works in construction, I think. And like,
I don't think that's construction. I think it was like a pit of dead bodies and he's like pouring.
No, 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 2003.
Oh, I think he's talking about pre, yeah. pre-zombies.
They're constructing a mass grave.
Yeah, no, 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 2003. He like, he's like working construction with his brother, I think.
He's a contractor.
Yeah, you could tell he loves his daughter, but there's like a disconnect between like what he's able to do as a single dad, where right. he's like constantly forgetting things and she has to, you know, fend for herself a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he's doing his best, but mm-hmm. it's not the kind of relationship that he eventually develops with Ellie, where he's able to sacrifice so much for her and kind of like put his own life on the line and set aside his own needs.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Joel, he grew a lot.
Mm-hmm.
He was this hardened son of a bitch, and then he turned into zombie daddy.
Yeah.
Zaddy.
Yeah.
Laughing at those dad jokes. Mm-hmm. What was the one? The Gene one.
There's so many. Many puns.
Did you know that diarrhea can run
in the family?
Can be, yeah. Can be hereditary. Oh, yeah.
Runs in Did your you genes.
Know, yeah, runs in your genes. Yeah.
Oh my God. It's true. Dad jokes are a superpower you get.
I cracked up at that.
As soon as you have a progeny.
But like you have like, you know, you have Ellie and it's like she's clearly a kid and, mm-hmm. and he wants to preserve that. She even has like a big old book of puns.
Yeah.
And he's like, he's enjoying that. You know, in a world that's so hostile, it's like you don't have that anymore. Just the innocence of a child.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And her innocence is broken by going on this journey, by encountering all of these evil people.
Yeah.
So I don't blame him for lying, but also it wouldn't have hurt her to be like, hey, by the way, they were going to kill you.
Yeah.
And I saved you.
Yeah.
I had to get you out of there.
Mm-hmm.
That's how much you mean to me. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
You're the best.
That's why I'm leaning it more towards he can't accept it for himself.
Yeah, I agree with that. Okay, so my next one is, will HBO deliver for part two? Since this was such a great miniseries, they're only going to do part one and two. There is no part three.
I mean, that alone gives me confidence to say yes, because they're not going to drag it out.
They said we're not going to do further than the games.
Yeah.
Correct, yep.
If that's the case, if they can stick to it, if they have the same people on, then I don't see why not.
How about you, Doug?
I'm stoked. They, as soon as like the last episode happened, I was like, okay, what's happening with season two? I need to know. And, I hear they're already, you know, writing it and, you know, already at work. They're going
to play the game.
Yeah. They're going to take part two and, divvy it up into two seasons, I believe. That's what they told.
I saw on YouTube when I was looking at the cinematics, part one was like 3 hours long. Part two is 8 hours.
Yeah, oh. I still haven't played part two yet. I got
really.
I unfortunately had a plot point spoiled for me. Don't worry, I'm not going to hint at it. I'm not going to tell you guys anything about it.
Play it on twitch.tv/wow_thepoptart.
Yes, I will be playing it on there. Absolutely. There's a lot of fans that are divided about season two. I know that it's, you know, just as good. I hear it's just as good with like rich character stories. And then, you know,
there's a time jump.
There's a time jump. Ellie gets a girlfriend. So it's like,
whoa,
there's a lot of things that
lost their minds about that one.
Yeah. There's a lot of things going. Yeah. There's a lot of things going on with there. Mm-hmm.
There's a whole hullabaloo on the internet about that.
Man. Yeah. After
is
you know,
because Neckbeards wanted Ellie to be their
girlfriend.
Putting
the switches in the game.
Oh God!
Yeah,
it was that time, wasn't it? Yeah. When did that game come out? 2015.
It had to come out at least 20.
Because 2013,
right in the throes of Gamergate.
Oh, 2020.
2020.
What about
part two?
Part two came out in 2020 for PlayStation 4.
There's still a hullabaloo.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
I think I kind of remember that.
Yeah, I think it was like right before the pandemic is when it came out, I think.
Okay. Yeah, the pandemic kind of switched priorities a little bit.
But keep the same energy that you did with part one. Okay. That's all I have to say and it's the same showrunners. It's going to be the same people who worked on part on this last season. So
okie dokie. Here's a real question. Should I play part two? before HBO does their adaptation, or should I wait?
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'm not going to wait.
Okay.
So I'm going to tell you not to wait either.
Okay. I mean, it's coming back in 2 years.
Yeah, it's going to be a while before they...
It's like, I don't want to wait.
Yeah, no, I want to know what happens with part two. Yeah, no, I would highly recommend just playing the part two game if you want to know what happens next.
Do you think part two will be remade for PC before...
I hope so.
I'm not buying a PlayStation 4.
If anybody out there can hear me in the video game world, aka the company who made this, which was Naughty Dog, please release it on PC within the next year. I appreciate you and love you.
All right.
I think you're going to have to ask Sony about that.
Yeah. Or maybe I'll just let Armand borrow my PlayStation 4 or 5.
There you go.
Like the old days where you're going to your friend's house and they don't have a PlayStation, so you bring your whole game system with controllers.
Yeah.
Oh, I miss those days.
I forgot my power cord.
Don't you have one? You don't? Oh, God.
Stuff it all in your backpack.
All right, my final question. Would you recommend The Last of Us Part 1 to a friend?
No.
No?
Of course I would.
Oh, my God.
Who do you think you're talking to?
Put me on a roller coaster just like the show.
Yeah, I mean, if you haven't watched it already, which is like none of you listening right now, but certainly recommend it to a friend who hasn't watched it.
Nice.
I very much enjoyed this. We're in a drought of good TV shows right now.
We are.
It's even worse for movies, but mm-hmm. Yeah, this
Jordan is Peele's making his Christmas movie.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah, this is yeah, you're not going to be disappointed. This is quality filmmaking that
this is cinema.
It lives up to the hype.
It really does. Yes, Doug, yep. Would you recommend it?
100%. Yeah, I actually have a story about recommending it to somebody.
Oh my God, story time!
So story time. My mom, who doesn't do well with horror stuff, doesn't like horror movies, doesn't like anything that scares her. Me and my dad were watching the show for like 6 weeks, the first 6 episodes. And then she's like, well, I want to watch it with you guys. So I told her, I'm like, this might be a scary show for you because of the clickers, which, I mean, by the way, it's not really that scary in the end. I mean, yes, it's terrifying. But so
people that don't like horror.
Yeah. People who don't like horror. You know, my non-horror mom watched this. She binged it within a day and a half.
Holy shit.
7 episodes. God. And she came back to me and she was like, Doug, wow, thank you for that recommendation. I love you so much. I'm ready to watch the finale with you and your father.
Whoa. You finally earned your mother's love.
So I was just like, I was like, finally, I recommended something to like a family member and they didn't tell me, God, it sucked right in my face. Because I mean, my taste in movies and shows are a little different. But
that's incredible.
Yes. I mean, this show has all the acting. It has all the writing. It has all the drama. Mm-hmm. I mean, you think you're going to be scared about it at it, but I mean, yeah, it'll terrify you a little bit. But in the end, it doesn't focus on horror. It focuses on the people.
Exactly. Mm. That's what makes a great story.
That's what makes it a great show. Yeah, it's a great story. Connect
with it.
Yep.
Yeah, my non-horror loving fiance approached me. I was like, Armand, I want to watch The Last of Us. And I was like, oh my God, I've been wanting to watch it.
It's a miracle.
Yeah, let's do it. She was like, That was really good. I was like, It's amazing. Yeah, I would recommend it. Honestly, echoing what you just said, like anybody could watch it.
Yeah.
The story's there, and that's the forefront. Mm-hmm. It's the backdrop of zombie apocalypse. Where you have this awesome story of like Bill and Frank, Joel and Ellie, zombies. Like it's all there. It's like it's wonderfully done. And I just hope HBO has the same momentum going into part two.
Yeah.
That's all.
And you know, keep up with the casting too, because the casting that they did for this show was fantastic. And even I wanted to make a quick note here real quick. They brought back like all the original like voice actors from the game,
Ellie,
and like, but they didn't put them in like their normal roles. They put them in like different roles, and the original voice actress of Ellie was brought in to play the mom.
That's what I was trying to look up. Ashley Johnson,
and Ashley Johnson did a phenomenal job stepping into the mom role.
She was fantastic.
Because that's the final episode. Yeah, the final episode is where you finally get to meet Ellie's mom, and dude, I was crying as soon as I saw her on screen. I was like, it's my original Ellie. She's playing the mom. I'm like,
Looks like Bella Ramsey.
Probably not an accident.
I was just like, it was so perfect. It was just so perfectly done.
They brought in Troy Baker.
Yeah.
He was like one of the preacher guys.
Yeah, he was the guy who got axed.
Yeah.
Oof. Or cleavered. Cleavered, I should say.
Yes. Wow. That's amazing.
Marlene was the only one, fun fact, she was the original voice actress for Marlene in the game, and she was the only one that was brought back to play herself in the show.
That's neat.
Oh my God. Guys, this was a lot of fun.
Oh yes.
Thank you so much for doing this.
Yeah.
So we're at the end of the show. So Aaron, before we go, can anybody see you on another podcast somewhere? Like, are you like out in space or something? What's going on?
Funny you should ask. Yes, I have a Star Wars podcast called WSTR, Galactic Public Access.
Oh, yeah.
You can find us at WSTR Media pretty much everywhere. We live stream our recording every week on Thursday evenings. So if you want to stick around for that, that'd be great. That's over on YouTube. And we release a new episode every Monday, both video and audio, available wherever fine podcasts are sold.
Very nice. And Doug, I know you're a screenwriter, but where can people see you on the internet?
They can find me at playing horror games over at on Twitch at, Twitch.tv/WoW_ it's a pop.
Why do you always do this with your username?
I don't know.
He picked it when he was 15, and he's going to stick with it.
It was picked out when one of my friends was high. I mean, and they odds me to do it, and I was like, okay, I'll do it. Wow, it's a Pop-Tart. Done and done.
You thought I didn't want you thought I wasn't going to do it? Well, I did it. Wow_ it's a Pop-Tart.
Exactly.
Well, thank you, guys. This was a lot of fun, and I look forward to doing part two whenever that comes out.
Eventually. Absolutely.
Hell yeah, bro.
Let's do it.
I'm down for it.
Ready to end this?
Let's end it.
And we're done. Goodbye.
Bye.
That's it for this time on The Syndicate. We hope you enjoyed yourself. Keep the conversation going by adding us on Instagram and Letterboxd at Syndicate. Or join the Discord server where you can catch Armand along other podcasters and listeners at syndicate.com/discord. And until next time, stop that scroll and spend more time watching. Goodbye.